Most of the episodes of this podcast deal with a topic to do with German, sometimes from the perspective of coming from an English language background. Today we're switching things around. We're going to be looking at the English language this time, from the perspective of a German language background. What's English like as seen through the eyes of a native speaker of German? What are some things we take for granted in English that German speakers might struggle with? And what's it like for an Austrian school student to learn English? We're going to be finding answers to these questions and more in today's episode. As always, the opinions you'll hear in this episode are the opinions of those speakers only. So, let's crack on with the show. This is Yellow of the Egg, the podcast where we treat the German language and the English language to a spot of afternoon tea. I'm Luke Green, and this is Series 2, Episode 4, Austrians Learning English.
Actually started learning English in kindergarten. There were only weekly lessons and we only learned vocabulary, but still, that was my first contact with English, actually.
This is Tanya, a former student of mine here in Vienna, who last year finished her final secondary school exams. She's Austrian and a native speaker of German. Some of her first contact with English came as early as kindergarten, but this contact with the language stayed mostly within educational settings, since English didn't play that much of a role in her life at home growing up.
It was mainly German because my whole family is from Austria and we never really spoke English in our family because there was never a reason to do so. Contact with English on television actually just came when I was around, let's say, 12 or 13 years old, when I spent more time on social media but also watched or started watching movies and series in English, because that was when I was confident enough that I really thought, okay, I would now understand most of it, because before that, I didn't really think I would understand enough.
We're living in a time where English is, to say the least, a very dominant language all around the world, with a lot of the media coming into countries like Austria being in English, and with English being seen as an extremely important language to learn and become fluent in. And while English might not be present in every child's home life in Austria, it is usually the first foreign language that's offered in the school system, and it often starts with learning individual, simple words in kindergarten.
It was really just vocabulary that we learned. Yeah, things like different colours or house and boy and girl, you know, those basic vocabulary.
So we had this kind of like English sessions in the gym hall, where they put like pictures of animals on the floor.
This is Sophie, another former student of mine who finished school last year too, also Austrian and a native speaker of German. Her first real contact with English was also in kindergarten.
They ask us, oh, what is this in English? And then we would have to, I don't know, step on a cow when they said cow and run to a pig if they said pig and stuff like that.
Funny how farm animals feature so heavily in the early stages of language learning, whether it's a first language or a foreign language. You have to start somewhere, I guess. But as is the case with language learning in general, you have to go through the stage of hearing the target language and only really getting individual words without understanding what's actually being said. This can only change over some time.
Well, I don't really remember moments where I didn't really understand it, because my family never talked in English when I was at the beginning of my journey, because there was never reason for it. And I was barely surrounded by people that were just talking in English, at least as far as I can remember.
So my grandparents always took me on trips, and then we went to Egypt or like long distance holidays together. So when we were in a hotel, I heard them speaking English and I was always so astonished by their level of English. And I was like, oh my God, they speak so well and this is amazing and I want to speak English. And then As the older I got, I realized how bad their English was. And that was actually something really funny because I was always so amazed. And then this amazement just grew down by the time.
In that earlier phase where you can't distinguish one word from the next and you can't decipher the meaning of what's being said, the only thing you have to really go by when you hear spoken English is how it sounds to you, the general impression that you get from it. And there are certain impressions of English that are quite widespread among non-native speakers. For example,
I would probably say pretty smooth, and what always comes to my mind is like it's pretty round. It's not hard, it's just very soft and smooth and flowy. Like that's the adjectives that come into my mind when thinking of the English language.
English is a language where we tend to link up most of our words when we speak, so we usually end up with one long continuous stretch of speech, rather than individual words separated from each other, as is the case with Standard German. So English can sound very smooth in comparison, especially to non-native speakers. Although we do have to keep in mind that there are many different Englishes which have their own features, which make them sound a different way. For learners of English, there tend to be two main varieties that you can go for, or that you are normally taught about in detail: American English and British English. And these two obviously sound different to each other, and come across differently to non-native speakers, sometimes evoking funny images and stereotypes.
Well, American does sound to me as if someone was just chewing a gum all day long. Like, oh my god, it's so cool here, and you got the chewy sound, and it's just so American, and oh my god. So that's American for me, just literally. And then British can get really, really posh. You know, when you get this, how do you do? Oh my god, it's such an amazing day. How's the weather today? And you get this really, like, calm and posh sound. And I always feel like when I think of American English, I think of a cowboy. And when I think of British English, I feel like probably a woman from a weather forecast or something. I feel like weather forecasts is the perfect way to describe British English.
I've literally never thought of weather forecasts as a typical representation of a standard British accent. But this is probably the famed BBC accent, the accent that's considered the standard for British English. And that's the point. This is just a standard accent. British English isn't just the BBC accent. It isn't just the weather forecast.
There's not this one British English. It just doesn't exist. And there are different, like, dialects or accents depending on where you live in England, and there is not only this one British English. For instance, there's Cockney or like the London accent. I really think that for me, English when I was younger, it probably sounded like some foreign, confusing, cryptic, mythical thing I could not understand, and that's why I was so astonished when hearing people talking in English. But now this illusion has kind of like popped away. And I'm open for all the different kinds of English that exist. And I think you're not as aware of these accents when just starting to learn a language.
The resources that are available to English teachers and students are reflecting this diversity of accents and dialects more and more. Where before you would listen to and learn this standard BBC received pronunciation style English in school, nowadays the school books include all sorts of varieties in their reading and listening exercises. Students listen to speakers of Australian English, Irish English, Indian English, speakers with a Mexican accent, a Chinese accent, and so on. So the books and resources are catching up to the reality of the English language. Still, the dominance of American and British remains, with the other varieties dotted around in the school books.
Well, we had a unit about Ireland in, I think, fourth grade and also in eighth grade. But we didn't much talk about accents, but we did talk about Australian accent for quite a while. There's this very famous unit in Moore where you learn about the blue ring octopus, and then they always come up with the accent as well. I remember that.
The difference here, though, is that students tend to learn about these other varieties as chapters or units in the school book, and then they move on. The general variety that the students learn themselves tends to be either British or American. And of these two, one is still seen as generally more prestigious, at least by many.
I think living in Europe, it's probably more important to learn British English. Yeah, and I think that's what the teachers here want, let's just say more, or what they rather want.
I think they're meant to teach British English, but I'm not sure about that. But I think most of them just speak a mixture of both British and American.
I think the books we used at school were mostly in British English. But I remember my teacher always said, it's okay if we want to go for American English, but if we decide for one, we have to stick with that one. We cannot switch between American English and British English all the time, because then it would definitely be incorrect at some point.
This is something you hear quite a lot, at least in the places of education I've been to here in Vienna. You should be exposed to as many different varieties of English as possible, and it's okay to choose whatever variety of English you want to speak yourself, as long as you stick to it and remain consistent. Except you have to choose standard British or standard general American most of the time, because that's what's examined and that's what the teachers teach. And this mindset probably isn't likely to change anytime soon. Aside from the dominance of the US and the UK in the cultural and economic sense, at university on the teacher training program, at least here in Vienna, students have to choose between British or American English on courses dealing with aspects such as pronunciation and phonetic transcription. There are only these two options. It's no wonder, really, why these are then the two options taught and examined at schools. In her time at school, Sophie leaned more towards British English, for example, although there was influence from American English too.
I remember writing colour with a U and stuff like that. But again, I feel like it was British English, but then I was told it's tomato and not tomato. So I don't know, I can't really tell. Probably the writing or the spelling would be British, but then some pronunciation just gets missed out, like, and is not properly British as it should be.
Where there is a conscious choice to be made as to whether to go for British or American, different factors can play a role. These can be more long-term factors, such as where you plan to live and work in the future. But when you're at school, there are lots of factors that can easily influence your decision, such as what you're exposed to more, or simply how the varieties sound to you.
I had a girl from America in the last year, in my class in the last year of primary school, and that time being American was just pretty cool, and so we also wanted to talk American English. But after the years, and I think that was just maybe last year or the year before that, I realized to me the British English sounds way prettier.
Putting aside individual accents for a moment, one aspect of English that's especially tricky for learners is the pronunciation of words in general. It's sometimes said that when you learn English, you actually have to learn two languages, the way it's written and the way it's pronounced. Since there isn't really a clear one-to-one relationship between spelling and pronunciation in English. And what might seem the logical pronunciation of a given word is pretty often not the case.
For example, the word comfortable. It took me years to realize that it's not comfortable. It was really a long time that I really thought you'd say it like this.
What I remember from lower secondary is that my English teacher always told me it's sad and not said, because I always said, but after some times I heard people in films say said, and that was really something that triggered me, because I was drilled to say said instead of said, and then I heard it afterwards. That was really annoying and sad.
There are a few reasons why English spelling and pronunciation don't seem to match up very well. One is that English spelling was fixed fairly early due to the printing press, meaning that English pronunciation naturally changed over time, while spelling stayed relatively consistent. This is why we spell words like knee with a K, because we used to say it with a K. and why we have words with silent GHs, like night, which would have been pronounced something like Nicht before. You can see the relation to the German word Nacht more clearly when you think about this. If you consider how the word light would probably have been pronounced, it would sound a bit like Licht, which is essentially German, Licht. But another reason why English pronunciation doesn't correspond fully with the spelling is because English is essentially a giant mix of other languages. There are so many words that have come from other languages into English. They then get adapted to English pronunciation rules, which means we end up with even more silent letters. Think of tsunami from Japanese with the silent T, or pneumonia from ancient Greek with the silent P. This is because TS and PN aren't clusters that are allowed in English. But since they are possible in German, learners of English sometimes pronounce these letters where they should be silent.
Also, the word psychology. And I mean, I realized that earlier when my brother always told me, oh, stop saying psychology, it's psychology. And I was, okay, I got it. And in general, just leaving out letters seemed a bit weird to me because I always thought that was only the French lesson. And I never thought, yeah, actually leave out letters in English as well. I thought, okay, that's just French, but no, it's not. For example, also words like debt or something.
Whereby with the word debt, this is an odd case of the B never actually having been pronounced. It was added in spelling by scholars of the Middle Ages, who noted the connection to the Latin word debitum. There was no B before, but because of this connection, scholars added a silent B to the word, even though it never had any business being there. How are learners supposed to know that? But even if you put aside the fact that English spelling and pronunciation just doesn't seem to make much sense, at least if you don't know the history of it, there are sounds in English that don't exist in German and can cause some difficulties.
Yes. The th sound, because in Austria, or like in German in general, it's like you must not put your tongue between your teeth, and it's actually something bad to do. So when I was in kindergarten, I did it, and I used to call myself Thofi. And yeah, I had to go to a speech therapist to not put my tongue between my teeth. And then when I started learning English, I was told, put your tongue between your teeth. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I was forced with gummy bears and a lot of work not to do that. And I will not do it. So it took me a very long time to do it again and feel comfortable with putting my tongue between my teeth.
For speakers of German who haven't trained or retrained the sounds th and th, how are they likely to pronounce th when speaking English?
S, th, simply a t, maybe t, the, and z. I think s is the most common one, and I still don't get why, because there's no reason to pronounce a z instead of a th or T. Even T would be more reasonable to me than Z. I don't know. But when I think of my grandparents or like the older generation that learned English, it's really a thing they do.
When there's a sound we can't pronounce properly, we usually resort to a sound from our own language that either resembles the target sound or that's produced in a similar way. The TH sounds are dental sounds, meaning that we produce them with our tongue against our teeth. If we're not used to doing that, the closest options would be with the tongue a little bit behind our teeth, which is where we produce sounds like d, t, s, z, and so on. So it stands to reason why these are frequent substitutes.
And another thing was the pronunciation of V and W, so that the V is actually more sharp, like very, and W was like the smoother one, like wardrobe.
This is an interesting one. In German, there is only the fricative W. There is no W in standard German. So where there is a W, it's pronounced like an English V, like in words such as Wasser or Walnuss. You would think then that a common mistake would be to pronounce all words with W with W. And this is the case with some people. You can sometimes hear the stereotypical German accent pronouncing things like water as Worte or what as Wort. Something that you might not expect would be the opposite. And this actually happens quite a lot.
I think the most common mistake is just pronouncing a V like a W, so that people might say things like a big variation of something, or I don't know, going to varsity college or something like this, just pronouncing a V like a W. I think pronouncing a W like a V is a less common mistake. I mean, it does happen, but not as often, I think.
This might be a case of overgeneralization. Learners of English learn the W sound W and know that there is potential for confusion with V and W, and then apply the W sound to words with V as well, giving us video, village, and waxing. This is something I also hear quite a lot. But of course, it's not just the pronunciation that learners can struggle with. While German does seem to hold the title of having one of the most complicated and illogical grammar systems, English isn't without its difficulties. One such difficulty for German speakers might be the distinction between adjectives and adverbs, so when to use the ly ending, like in quietly, and when to leave it out, like in quiet. There's a good reason why this can be tricky.
Adverbs in German are pronounced and written exactly like adjectives. You cannot see a difference there, and that also made the use of adverbs hard for me to understand, because in German I couldn't really see a difference there.
In English, we have ly for a lot of our adverbs. Not all, but you can see it in words like quickly or suddenly. In German, there are a few adverb suffixes too, like weise in words like teilweise or schrittweise. But this ending isn't used to derive adverbs from adjectives, like the ly does in English. Usually, adjectives and adverbs just look the same in German.
By the time I got the hang of it, but still, it's something I think that German does that many other languages don't do. They all have an obvious difference between adjectives and adverbs, and in German you just don't see any.
Not at first glance, at least. You can tell if a word is an adjective or an adverb in German by the way it's used in a sentence, or by the context. Or if an adjective comes before a noun, it's usually inflected, whereas adverbs are not. But if you just see a word like langsam without context, it could be slow, it could be slowly. This is why you get a lot of learner mistakes, like the slowly man, or the sound was loudly. It doesn't make it any easier that there are adjectives in English that end in ly, like friendly or lovely. It's things like this that make you feel that languages are just trolling you. But it goes to show that it's not just German that has confusing grammar. English grammar is said to be relatively easy starting out. It doesn't have the cases and the genders and everything. But once you've got the basics down, the real work begins. Just look at things like tenses, or generally how to grammatically refer to time. German has a few ways, but English, well, you've got your present continuous, past tense, present perfect, continuous, past perfect, will future, conditional, future. It's enough to give learners a headache.
So I got the hang of not putting if with a will form and stuff like that, but then again, it's so much to think about, you know? I mean, I would say in general, English is more straightforward than German because there are no cases, no real genders and stuff like that. But I feel like the tenses, also with the ing form, we don't really have a ing form in German. That's something really specific for English. And I feel like German people or German speakers learning English often struggle with the tenses.
There is a sort of ing form in German. So for laughing, you could say lachend with a D at the end. But this isn't used in the sense of she is laughing, like we would say in English. You could say die lachende Frau, the laughing woman. But for she is laughing, you would just use the present simple and say sie lacht. Or, sie lacht gerade.
I mean, the normal ing form of like the continuous form, it was just like, okay, it's happening right now, I have to write ing. So, when I was speaking, the ing form mostly came naturally. But when I was writing, I really had to think about it, when to use it, when it was all right. And then I always told myself, okay, am I doing it right now? Or is it something I do regularly? And I just really had to remind myself of these rules.
The ing form isn't the only bit of grammar that's particularly tricky for speakers of German.
Oh, there's the present perfect. That always confuses me. The present perfect. Because why would you have a perfect tense for the present? It's just something that doesn't really exist in German, I feel, because there's either present tense or perfect tense, which would be the past tense. So why would you mix present and past? It just doesn't work. Yes, I got really emotional on this.
The present perfect can be especially infuriating for German speakers, because German has a perfect construction itself, but it can be used relatively interchangeably with the preterite, the Präteritum, also called the Mitvergangenheit. If you say, ich las das Buch, or ich habe das Buch gelesen, both mean I read the book.
In some German-speaking environments, you would use the perfect in the spoken language, but in others you wouldn't. You would just use the Präteritum. But there's not a rule to it. It just depends on who you're talking to and like how you prefer it. But it's not wrong to use the other one. And I think that's much more like strict in English.
Absolutely. Although this is also a bit of a fuzzy area. There are dialects of English, particularly in America, where you can use the past simple in places where learners would be taught the present perfect. For instance, students are usually taught that the word yet triggers the present perfect. So for example, have you been to the shops yet? But many native speakers would say, did you go to the shops yet? Which would often be marked as incorrect in schools here. In general, though, the way the past simple and present perfect are used in German is different to how they are used in English. When you're learning English as a German speaker, it can be fun to compare the two languages and discover such differences. Let's hear about some other differences that have stood out to Tanya and Sophie.
A difference I find very interesting are the gender assignments, because in English you just have the for anything, for a male person, for a woman, but also for an object like a table. And in German you have die for female things, or at least for female people, you have der for male people, and you have das for objects. You could say it like that, but the thing is there are so many exceptions. For example, you say der Tisch, which means the table, which is obviously an object but has the male gender grammatically speaking. So that's a bit confusing, I find, especially if you learn German coming from England or from America and not really understanding why it's der Tisch, because it's actually an object.
I have heard many a learner of English calling a ball he or a snake she because of the grammatical gender in German. And while you might hear some people refer to a child or a baby as it in English, it can sometimes sound jarring and derogatory. We tend to use the gendered pronouns he or she. In German, it would be fine to say es, since it's das Kind and das Baby. So I've also heard learners of English calling children it a lot. Speaking of pronouns, another difference that catches learners' attention concerns the second person pronouns.
One difference, though I'm not sure if it's really a difference, is that in English there's no real polite you form. So in German, you have this capitalized C form, and it's used as a plural form. And you use that to be polite or when talking to people of greater authority.
In English, we can use you, regardless of whether we're chatting to a close friend, speaking to a stranger, or talking up to somebody, such as someone in a position of relative authority, like a teacher or a judge. This pronoun you doesn't change. We can use this one pronoun in the singular and in the plural, and for informal and for formal interactions, and we often don't think twice about it. For someone with a first language, where there is a distinction between the casual and polite forms of you, such as German, this distinction can still be strongly perceived, even if it's not explicitly marked like in English. This can lead to interesting ways of perceiving the pronoun you.
When I was in England, I experienced that there actually is a kind of like polite form in English as well. So there was a great difference when I was talking to Dr. Jones, Miss Munoz, Madame Michelou, Ma'am, Sir. And when I said you after that, for me, in my head, it has always been a plural you and not a singular you. But then again, when I was talking to my house mother and we called her Tanya all the time, and then she was just Tanya. She was a you, a singular you. And I feel like most people think there is no difference in English, but I feel like there is. I feel it just gets lost because in English, you in singular and you in plural is just exactly the same as it's spelled. But in the end, maybe you use the plural you without even noticing it.
And how would we know? It's the same pronoun nowadays. Although it wasn't always this way. The pronoun you that we use today used to be the plural form, which was also used as the polite form, similar to how vous is used in French. The form equivalent to the German du used to be thou. So in a way, if we go by old standards, we're actually using the plural form whenever we speak to anyone. We're actually saying sie to everyone. No one is du anymore. It's also interesting that many people now see thou, thee, and thy in pop culture as pronouns to speak up to people, when actually it used to be the opposite. So while it might not exist as such in English anymore, we certainly used to have an explicit du-sie distinction. And it's interesting that Sophie, and probably some other German speakers too, still perceive this distinction in English as a result of their German language background. Though just because something is perceived to be a certain way, it doesn't mean it necessarily is that way, just as is the case with stereotypes. There are certain images of British and American people that Austrians might have, and they may or may not reflect the truth.
Okay, so I think that British people are often seen as very posh because people think of the royal family and are like, oh, they're just sitting there in their dresses, I don't know, drinking tea.
Yeah, that they're always drinking tea for any occasion because it's just, why not?
Also, these typical sounds like water bottle or stuff like that. That's just something that I feel like, yeah, I think British is just like this posh style. And I don't know, there's this series, Bridgerton. And I think Bridgerton really puts it on a point because, or Downton Abbey as well. It's just like this royal and high society, but in an old-fashioned way.
Or what I often think of are pretty cars, pretty old cars. And I don't even know why, but like an old black shiny car is something I often think of.
And that it's raining all the time, though I have to say it's not. Like whenever I was in England, it was not raining that much. So I was lucky concerning that.
Okay, so we Brits seem to be seen as posh, high class, old fashioned people drinking tea and driving pretty old black shiny cars in the rain. I guess I can confirm the obsession with drinking tea. In general, our British stereotypes are all right. America doesn't seem to come out of this quite as well, though.
American people, yeah, well, probably obese. I feel that's a stereotype of American people, though, of course, it's not really true. Well, maybe sometimes, but not in general, you know? Not when talking about all of America.
I often think of eating fast food and spending all the time in t-shirts and jeans.
Yeah, also like, I feel like America always seems to be this more like dirty place. And like, while Britain is this fancy and like, all everything's really clean and stuff. And I feel like America is the complete opposite in most of people's heads. So where it gets like dirty and there's this suburbs. Though in the end, of course, all these stereotypes are not necessarily true. There are not really nice places in London as well. And there might be the fanciest places in New York, or what do I know? So, yeah, of course, there are stereotypes in the end.
Let's turn the tables now. What do you think non-Austrians think about Austrians?
That we spent all our time in Dirndl and Lederhose, which is absolutely wrong because I think I don't even have a Dirndl, and I've worn one, I think, twice in my lifetime, and these were not mine.
That's something I get to hear quite often. So, oh yeah, are you going to wear a Dirndl? And I'm like, no, I only wear it, like, I mean, I wear it too rarely. Like, I would love to wear it more often, but it just doesn't happen.
If you don't know what a Dirndl is, I'll put a picture on the website. You might hear some people talking about wearing Tracht, which is generally this more traditional attire, which can include Dirndl and Lederhosen, worn more so at celebrations than just every day.
Second of all, people might think we always eat Wiener Schnitzel, which is definitely not the case. It's more like a festival food, for example. If you go to a restaurant for someone's birthday, you could be like, oh, maybe I get myself some Wiener Schnitzel, but you're not, oh, it's Tuesday evening and I'm in a mood for schnitzel. That's not that much the case, I think. Also, that we all live in the mountains, that might also be a stereotype many people think, but that's not true because the eastern part of Europe doesn't even have proper mountains, so that would not be possible.
Some of the stereotypes that exist are just plain bizarre.
What I read in a English magazine was about how people greet each other when seeing them on the street. And then they were like, okay, in French, you get like kisses on the cheek. And in England, we shake our hands. And then there was like, in Austria, people greet each other with a hand kiss. And I was like, well, no. I have never done that. I mean, I would do it when I go to like dance school and then we have to do it, but it's not a daily thing I do. I mean, there are like phrases you say as like, küss die Hand, schöne Frau, or, but like when someone says that to me, I'd be creeped out.
Learning a new language is about more than just learning how people speak. You eventually come to realize that a lot of the stereotypes and preconceptions people have of a certain group of speakers are simply not true, or at least not as prevalent as people may think before getting to know the culture. At least, I've never been kissed on the hand in Austria. I always find it interesting to see what learners of English think about English-speaking countries and cultures, what they like about the language, what they struggle with. And it's fascinating to see your own language through a learner's eyes. It shines a light on some funny things that we take for granted, like certain words or phrases that we might not necessarily think twice about.
I really like it's raining cats and dogs, because why on earth would it rain cats and dogs? Like, there's just no reason for it. I mean, I get that it means that it's raining a lot, but how do you come up with cats and dogs? Yeah, there's no explanation for this. And I also like fair enough, because I feel there is no German equivalent to it. I say fair enough all the time. So yeah, whenever I agree, I'm just like, fair enough. And there is no German equivalent. But I also like stuff like, oh, that's not my cup of tea. Or like, spill the tea, spill the beans. And like, when I say spill the beans, I'm just like, oh my God, it's just so British, because British people just eat beans all day long and then they want to spill the beans, and it's just something that works really well. So like, I can get why British people would say spill the beans, but I do not get why they would say it's raining cats and dogs. That's just a connection I cannot make in my brain.
There are some things that just don't make sense, and for language learners this can be pretty frustrating, but it's also part of the fun. We strive to understand the target language, the people who speak that language, the culture that surrounds it. But sometimes we just have to take it for what it is. And on the road to achieving proficiency in the language and understanding of the culture, there can be bumps along the way. But it's important not to get disheartened by the setbacks, when things don't make sense, or if you can't get the hang of something. German has this reputation for being tricky to learn, but as we've heard, English has its own difficulties and peculiarities too. Learners of English don't have it as easy as you might think. There are resources, tips and tricks to help you get as good as possible. But is there a secret to reaching fluency in English?
I don't really know. I mean, English was the first language I really had to speak apart from German. So it was my first, second language. So I had to get out of this habit of wanting to be perfect and like say everything correctly. And I just had to put myself out there. And because if you do not speak a new language, you will never really be able to, and you will never be perfect at it. So you have to work to this perfectness in the end. And yeah, it was something I had to learn, that I could not do everything correctly in the first try. And that I had to fail in order to become better.
Thank you so much to Sophie and Tanya for joining me for this episode. I also want to take this opportunity to congratulate them on their final school exams last year, and to wish them the very best for the future. I really enjoyed the lessons with them. Thank you both. As always, you can find me on Instagram at Yote Podcast, that's Yote Podcast, Facebook at Yellow of the Egg, or you can email me at yellowoftheegg.podcast@gmail.com. I'd really appreciate you telling people about the podcast and giving it a nice 5-star rating and review. So with all that being said, thank you so much for listening. Playing us out this series are Euphonics, this time with Listen. Check them out on Spotify, links in the show notes. Enjoy the song, and I'll see you in the next episode. Macht's es gut. Servus aus Wien.
Listen, what my baby's saying. Sometimes I don't really know if I should believe in his words.